views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, happy Friday. Welcome back. And I've been thinking a lot about this issue of nuclear war. I mentioned the other night, maybe it was last night, I don't know. It may just be that the international Jewish Zionist monetary matrix that runs most of the developed world, directly or indirectly, may choose not to have a nuclear war because they don't want to mess up their good times. They've got things so well under control now, it's not funny. So that may be our best safety net, their greed. Maybe that'll protect us. Think about it, because it'll throw off all of their money engines. It'll mess everything up. Interesting. The big story, though, I think, was the demolition of that. It's over a mile and a half long. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, a big bridge, went into the bay there. I don't know how they're going to rebuild it quickly. I think it's going to take a long time. There's a lot of talk about major strategic access to that part of the country having now been certainly hampered, if not outright cut off in many ways. So it's a big story. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Don Jeffries and some other things as well, such as squatters. They're not squatters. They're home thieves. They're stealing homes. And people have no right. The courts, the communist courts, are stabbing the homeowners in the back. It's just incredible. Hello, Don. Welcome back. Glad to have you on Friday.
Yeah, I tell you, it's all confusing now. I'm beginning and closing out the week with you, so good to be here.
That's right. Well, thank you. Now, if you're new to the program, Don is always with us every Monday, but he's available tonight, and I had an opening, so I called and asked, and he said, sure. We always want to try to do things that you will find helpful, informative, and interesting. And Don does just that. He's one of America's greatest living authors. His books are extraordinary. The new one is coming out. When's the new one coming out, The Hidden History?
They've kicked that back to August now. It's going to be called American Memory Hole. It's basically my fourth volume of hidden history, but it's third volume, but it's going to have a lot of good stuff in there. You'll learn probably more than
America's Memory Hole. That's good.
American Memory Hole. Yeah.
That assumes a couple of things. One, that most of us are going to be here in August. So two, they always do that. Why do they take so long getting a book done and out of press and on the sales rack, so to speak? Yeah. Now, give me a phone number. I'm going to call somebody about this. This is disgusting. That book should be out here this next week or month.
I'm fortunate that I'm lucky than most, because this will be my 10th book. So I'm lucky that I've got them, people to publish that many books. And it does take a while. It's frustrating, but they basically have a spring and fall catalog, and excuse me, it was supposed to be part of the spring catalog, and I don't know, they probably had, Skyhorse is my primary publisher, their division is Simon and Schuster now, and so they get the biggest names in the alt world. They published Alex Jones's book that was the number one book in the world. They published Robert F. Kennedy.
Alex Jones' book was the number one book in the world.
It was the number one book for it. It's the number one seller, and RFK Jr.'s
book
was as well.
What does that
say?
And
they publish. Well, it's all about name recognition. So I'm fortunate that this will be my fourth book with them, and you know, they have a lot of big names. They publish Woody Allen and Oliver Stone, Roger Stone, Jesse Ventura. So they have a lot more big name authors now. So I'm I'm flattered to be in their company. So
well, good. No, you deserve it. Don't be flattered. Well, be respectful, but you deserve it. You're that good. I'm not blowing smoke. This issue of delay, though, you're welcome. This issue of delay, Brad Steiger and I used to talk about this. Brad published, I'm going to guess.
He must have had 1,000 books or something.
Well, that's not a big stretch. He had, I think, over 180 books total. Yeah. It was crazy. And he was on the program.
Is his wife Bless still him. Around? Because he wrote some of them with her.
No, Sherry passed.
Okay.
A couple of years, 3 years ago, I think, something like that. But he was on the program for years and years, 15, 16, 18, I don't know,
yeah,
long time.
Yeah, sure.
And we had such fun over the years. If you look on the left-hand side of the homepage and scroll way down, you'll find some of the greats who are no longer actively walking on the planet with us.
Yeah.
They're there. And a lot of Brad's things are there. I try to put things up. That can honor some of these wonderful, wonderful people.
Oh, he was. I remember when I was a kid, you know, reading his, because next to the JFK assassination, that was always my number one issue. But my second issue was UFOs and, you know, unexplained phenomena, that stuff. And, you know, Steiger wrote so many books. Did you ever interview John Keel?
I had John on one time. He was in his health. Was not good.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get him back, but I think it was one time that he was on. And you know, he wrote the Mothman book and other books.
Oh, Eighth really Tower. Yeah, great stuff.
Made him a you know, an everlasting figure in the world of paranormal writing. And a very fine man. I remember he was very kindly. And do you know who I had on last night? Thanks to Donald Schmidt? Roy Thinnes.
Oh, wow. From the Invaders.
The Invaders.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I'm jealous.
that was a kick. He is great. And he was also in three episodes of X-Files that are found them to be as good as any of the X-Files episodes, especially where he was in that restaurant and this guy shot two people and he said, I'm going to die. And the guy's on the floor. He says, no one's going to die today. And he healed them right there.
Yeah,
it was just a great role.
Yeah. 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 He's you're right. He's that show, The Invaders, was very cool. I think it was on two seasons or something, but so they,
what,
was,
one, they,
oh,
they
just
pulled
one?
The
okay,
rug
just
out
one.
From under it. Yeah. 40 episodes.
Yeah. So
and it was
know where
stupid.
I was gonna go.
It was a very intellectual program. Very smart.
Yeah. No, it was great. I remember being a kid and they had so many, they had lots of great shows back in the 60s. They put a little more time and effort into it.
Yes, they did.
And they do now. Yeah, but so that's what I've envied you. You've interviewed almost all the. That's why I'm honored to be on this platform because I know.
Oh, come on.
The people. Well, there's incredible people. I mean, people like John Keel. Although, you know, John Keel was on. He was probably the strangest guest that David Letterman ever had. Do you know he's on one of the episodes of David Letterman?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I can't.
I have to think about that.
That would be wild.
I mean, it made no sense. I mean, Letterman must have been a fan or something because I think you can still find. Probably not the whole interview, but you can find some clips out there. But I remember seeing that. I said, wow, you know, because I loved David Letterman when he first came on because he was eclectic like that at first. You know, he would have somebody like that on the wall that nobody else would have. And
he was kind of like us, so to speak. And then he changed over time.
Yeah, he was very,
I don't know.
Oh, he's pathetic now. It's really sad to see what he's become. But still, even if he came back today, if you look at what's the other late night people. I mean, just, you know, I remember when Norm Macdonald died, I didn't really follow comedians much. And a couple of my young friends that like my work and they follow me, they sent me clips. Hey, you like Norm Macdonald? I said, I don't really know much about him. And so I started watching. I said, wow, this guy was really incredible. So I started watching all his appearances on Letterman show, especially. And, he was really, really funny. I said, damn, I don't know how I missed this guy. But just watching, you know, Letterman's up until like his, I think McDonald was on his last show. I think Letterman's show went off the air in 2015, maybe 2017. I don't know, but at any rate, just watching that clip now, and that's at the most 9 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, it is like watching something in a completely different universe. I mean, and that was Letterman was no, he wasn't it, and anywhere near as good as he was, but it was different world.
I mean,
you look at it, it's like, and you look at the talk shows now, and it's like it's a completely different world, because that time you could have people like Norm Macdonald come on and be irreverent and politically incorrect and stuff. Now you can't have any of that. It's just ironically, if Letterman was on today, he'd probably be doing the same thing, just stupid monologues about, you know, how bad Trump is and stuff.
Right. You know what happened when Letterman went off the air? And it's kind of sad. I do not like late night TV. And I think the hosts now, they might as well be called late night cadavers. Yes. They're hideous, horrible people. I there's not a funny bone, a funny cell in their body, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
The program after Letterman was The Late Show and then The Late Late Show. Well, the host of The Late Late Show was Craig Ferguson for years.
Yeah.
Letterman
signed
him. Craig Ferguson had funny bones in his body. He was very creative, very quick-witted, maybe drug-assisted. I don't know, but the guy was good. I would watch reruns of his. Mm-hmm. I would watch him occasionally. And that's saying a lot for me. I'm very high standards. He was funny. Funny when there was still funny. These people now... Yeah. It's like they, you know what it is? Jewish comics are brilliant. They know intuitively the cadence and the punch. And it doesn't even have to be funny. It's the run-up and the punch. This is not new. But Jewish comics have that, it's almost a genetic talent they have. They really know how to set it up and then hit it. You don't see these comics now, though, the Jewish comics, the Kimmels and what the hell's the other
Seth Meyers. I don't know. Seth Meyers.
They're all Jewish.
Colbert. I don't think Colbert is Jewish, but he's pathetic.
He's who signs his checks? Anyway, the deal is they're not funny anymore. Guy on the Tonight Show. Jimmy Fallon. Not a funny cell in his body. It's not there. But, and these guys remember, they're utterly dependent upon their writers. They're not spontaneous. It's all scripted. And if the writers have an off day or whatever, the audience doesn't laugh as much. I think the audience laughs anyhow.
Yes,
Craig Ferguson, though, I want to tell you, he was a funny man and still is, I guess. And it was too bad because when Letterman went, that show went with him, at least the Craig Ferguson aspect of it. But that was a loss. Letterman changed so much, in my view, as to almost not be recognizable.
He was when he first came on the air, that was a really clever show. He took what Steve Allen did, especially, and really refined it and updated it. And it was just, you didn't even necessarily need the guest, and he made a star at Larry Bud Melman, who I just loved Larry Bud Melman. I mean, this guy was Letterman would do things like that. He was a
that's
receptionist.
Steve Allen. That's Steve Allen.
Yeah, he got a lot of it from Steve Allen, but I think he was funnier than Steve Allen. He got this Larry Bud Melman. He was a receptionist at a clinic or something, and Letterman saw something
picked
in him.
Wow.
and boy, he was a cult. I mean, you watch those things now. Ask Mr. Melman and just. And then Chris Elliott and Mr. Conspiracy that would come on there. And, you know, he was great, too. And just really good stuff. And, you know, stupid pet tricks, things like that he would make up that
I agree
that, were original. But anyhow, but you watch it now and it's like, you know, it is like watching Steve Allen. It's that antiquated because, unfortunately, we live in a completely different world now. And it's culture is it's so many. If you look at... I don't know if you go from that, and I don't know if you've seen or about this movie that's out there now. And I'm white, I'm going to say it, although the black stars of this movie claim that white people can't say the title of their stupid movie. but it's the Society of Magical Society of Magical Negroes or something like that. Have you heard this? That's out there now.
Yeah, I somehow saw the preview, and I honestly cringed. I don't want anything to do with it.
I don't see how Hollywood could get any lower than that. But I mean, the premise of this film is that. This is the world. And I've talked to some of these liberals. They think this is the world. They are convincing millions of people that there could be a benevolent society of black magical Negroes.
True.
Their idea is they are helping white people with their tears and helping white people be happy. They're secretly helping white people.
They're almost angelic. Magicians.
Yeah.
They come down and help.
I mean, do the blacks in the film really believe? I mean, and luckily it's gotten like some of the worst ratings ever, and it made almost no money, thank goodness. But so maybe there's some hope. But the idea that after all the money Hollywood has lost on movies,
they don't seem to be learning anything, do they?
No, they're doubling down, and you know, it's a reflection of where we are as a society. And so when you see things like that, then
we have to keep this in mind, Don, always. And I want to say before I forget to mention it, I had Steve Allen on a couple of times.
And wow. Jeez.
Oh, he was so geopolitically wise. He mm-hmm. knew what was going on. And he said something to me at one point, like, you know, it's over. He knew it was going into the can.
I would have asked him about Dorothy Kilgallen, because you know he was a semi regular on What's My Line. If he had, you know, none of those guys, Bennett Cerf, who was going to publish her book on the JFK assassination, supposedly.
Yeah,
he said nothing, and no. You know, she was obviously knocked up. But I wonder what his thoughts were on that.
I don't know if I asked him about that or not. I'd have to go back in the archives and listen to the program. But he really knew. I was talking to him off air too, and the guy, he's like us. He understands. He knew what was going on here and who was, I think he, without saying it, he knew the group in charge and where they were going to take it. And then I had...
No, I say he was very much opposed to Howard Stern. You know that he had gotten a lot of battles with.
Oh, he was disgusted by what they call humor today.
Yeah.
And he died just a few months after he was on. He was in that odd car crash in Los Angeles.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And I also had the really honor of having Stan Freberg on twice.
Wow.
The great Stan Freberg.
Yeah, you've had. Incredible.
I've been lucky.
I've
been really blessed.
Now you're now you've gone down to the path, having somebody like me on.
You in all likelihood, if there is any fairness at all, will rise to a level of in this society of similar renown. You deserve it as an author and as a guest and seriously a conversation. You are a master of the art. Of conversation, and very few people have that anymore. So take that.
Oh, that's very well. That's very kind of you. You know, you. I think you know, people. You're born with the gift of the gab, or you're not. I mean, I was always a talker. You know, I don't know how good of a listener I am, but
it has to do with how many beatings you absorb as a child. I think. No, I'm
well,
kidding.
You know, as a fat kid, I was I said this many times. I was an obese kid when obesity wasn't cool, and I managed to avoid really being bullied or made fun of much because I had a sharp wit and I could talk, and so I was able to, you know, if anybody tried to say anything to me, I could you know, throw a clever zinger back, or I could diffuse things with humor, and you know, I learned to do it. So maybe that's
one of the ways you learned how to do it. Exactly. You had a physical handicap, okay, appearance. I did too. Mm-hmm. It was different. But I, when I was in the fifth grade, you get your, you know, your teeth are all, your beautiful new second teeth are in and all that. And my cousin had broken his arm. He was an idiot. And We had to line up in girls' line and boys' line to go back into class after lunch, for example. You line up in girls' line, it was segregated, boys' line.
Yeah.
So we were horsing around, and I pushed him, and he tripped, and he fell into the girls'. And it was very big embarrassment. And they all girls all laughed at him. He got up, and he had his arm in a cast, and he hit me in the mouth and knocked out my two top front teeth. That is your calling card in life, your top two teeth.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
So my left hand went up to my mouth. I'm left-handed. And I went, and in my hand were both teeth broken off at the gum line, one of them, and the other was about half broken off on a diagonal. I held my teeth, and he knocked me on the ground. I mean, he knocked me flat. Mm-hmm. And the principal came out. This is a true story. On the playground, asphalt. We always had asphalt playgrounds. Anyway, he came out, and he said, "What's going on here?" And he was a real tall guy, about 6'3", and his name was Immler, Immler, as in Herr Immler. And he came out, and he said, "What's going on here?" And everyone was afraid of Herr Immler. So I managed to get up, and he grabbed me in my right hand, and my teeth are still in my left hand, and my tongue is feeling for my front teeth, and they're gone. And I was in my right hand. He was holding my right hand. He grabbed my cousin in his left hand. His right arm was broken. And he dragged us off, walked us off, but very roughly, from the playground. And it was one of these schools that had a main central hallway inside of a two-story kind of a big building. The hallway went down, I don't know, 100 yards, and there were classrooms on each side of the hallway. Doors, you open the door, you go into your class. It must have been 20 classrooms. Well, he took us in the building, and I had no idea. My head was still ringing because he hit me hard. And we went into the hallway, and he went up to the first door. He didn't go to the office. I said, "What's he doing?" He kicked on the door with his shoe while still holding me in my right hand and my cousin in his left hand. And the teacher opened the door. "Yes, Mr. Principal, Principal Immler." And he dragged us up in front of the class and identified us by name and said, "This boy, such and such, just knocked out this boy, Jeffrey Rents, his permanent second front teeth. He'll never have any more. Let this be a lesson to you." And he did this almost all the way down the corridor. I was so humiliated, you cannot believe it. And everybody had these beautiful, perfect white teeth, especially the girls. They'd just gotten them in. And I didn't go to school for a couple of days, and then we didn't have a lot of money, and my mother finally got me to a dentist, who I think was another war criminal, escaped. And he ground on my one front tooth at the gum line, which was sheared right off at the gum line, and put a crown on it. And the other one, he left alone. He didn't put anything on it. And the crown he put on the one that was broken off at the gum line was bright sterling silver, stainless steel, whatever you want to call it.
Geez,
so I looked like that. What was that big tall guy used to play monsters in movies with? He had weird teeth. Whatever. Anyhow, I smiled from my fifth grade class picture like everybody else. And when that class picture came out and I saw my smile, I literally never smiled with my teeth again. I kept my mouth shut. I learned how to talk where no one could see my upper teeth. I didn't have a mustache then. And it was so effective that I knew in high school a girl for a couple of years. And she had a locker down low in the locker corridor, and I had a locker up high. And I was opening my locker, and she was down below opening her locker. And she looked up at me, and she said, "Jeff, what happened to your teeth?" And this is in high school, like 10th, 11th grade. And I did go back to the dentist once, and he took that piece of stainless steel out of my mouth and replaced it with a gold crown cap, which had a piece of plastic glued on the front of it that was supposed to look like a tooth, white. It looked like an automobile accident. My mouth, and the other tooth was broken off at 45 degrees. So when you say you were large and you were I was the same thing. I was able to learn to talk and say funny things just like you. I understand what you're saying. I was really ugly. I'm telling you, I was ugly. Those teeth were awful. Anyway, I still don't smile with my teeth.
You never got them replaced?
When I was in college, I saved up enough money to get one done with a porcelain white tooth-looking crown, and the other was broke off still at 45 degrees, and I finally got that one done too. But it was too late. I don't smile with my teeth.
I
grew a mustache, and I'm fine now. But I'm serious. I look at people smiling with their teeth, and you can see sometimes all 32 of them practically. And I'm amazed that people do that, because I never did. But I'm just relating to you because of your obesity.
And things like that. I mean, I had kids in school that I felt sorry. So it was always like one, it seemed like, that was in a school that had probably got burned by scalding hot water and had a burn mark on their neck.
Yep.
And I always felt, because, I mean, you can't not notice that, you know, the scar tissue, and it's just, you know, a lot of them were fine other than that. But, I always, just because I knew I was different, so I always tried to look, you know, tried to see the, you know, the little kind of flaws like that. And I always, and that's why I wrote Bullyocracy, because even though I really wasn't bullied, but because I managed to deflect it. But I, you know, and I'm sure you are the same way. When I was walking through elementary school, I lost all my weight right before I went to high school. I just went on a diet and transformed my appearance. But so I didn't have to worry about them. But
you did that on your own, Don? You disciplined yourself? And you, wow.
It was called Quick Weight Loss Diet. Wasn't Atkins, but it was basically the Atkins diet. It was Dr. Pritkins or somebody's doctor's something quick weight. I heard about it, and it was easy for me. I just had to, I love starches and, you know, potatoes and pasta and all that, but you just had to eliminate all that, but you could eat, you know, all the meat you wanted and vegetables. And so
you just cut down to a half a dozen donuts at a sitting, and you'll come off.
Well, I also learned as I got older, you know, it isn't good to eat, like, you know, a whole half a pack of Oreos at night while you're sitting watching the Andy Griffith Show, things like that. So I realized that you can't do that. You're going to gain weight. And so, you know, and I weigh just about what I weighed in high school, what I weighed when I was married. So I managed to keep my weight very consistent for a long time, because I never want to have that problem again. That's why I have a problem with fat people. I sometimes criticize them too much, because I was one. And I know, I guess you kind of start self-hating, but, you know, when you're like walking through that elementary school jungle, like you were as well, you know, I was like a gazelle or a zebra or something. I was scanning, you know, I'm looking for predators, because I know that, you know, that it's there. The possibility is always there when you're walking around looking like I did. And so you just, you know, you just, I didn't have a gun with me because it wasn't the jungle, but I had a tongue. And I recognized as soon as somebody, because nobody was going to come up and just hit me. So I recognized as somebody said something, I got to have a quick comeback here. And
I understand. I know it does. It did work. Yes. Yes. As I look back on this, I went from nice, normal teeth, and that's the age, fifth grade, when you realize that looks matter. That's when you start to become conscious of your looks and your appearance.
Yep,
that's it.
Yep.
And the focal point is usually the mouth, the teeth. Now, in your case, you were the focal point, all of you. You were big.
Yeah.
That you can't miss that. Now, that's a terrible thing. And what you did, what you accomplished is astounding to me, that you had that kind of discipline and awareness at that time.
Well, you know what it was? It was, I'm sure he's not listening, but I had an alcoholic brother-in-law who, you know, but he did one good thing for me in his life. And that was when he was drunk one time, he started berating me and telling me that, you know, how fat I was. And I was never, you know, don't you want girlfriends? You're never going to be able to get a girl and all this stuff. And I think it just pissed me off so much it motivated me to do it, because
a good thing. No, I hear that.
Yeah. So I tipped my hat to him out there, because I don't know that I didn't know I had that kind of discipline.
Right. You know, well, most kids, Now, can you imagine now? Jesus, just give me another half dozen donuts and give me my cell phone and leave me alone.
I wonder, you know, if I was in school today, I wouldn't have looked really out of place. I mean, I just would have been one more, you know, obese kid. And
40% of America obese now.
Yeah. 40. So I don't know how much, how motivated I could have been, you know, because they've made it so acceptable now that it's just really.
They have made it absolutely acceptable. Yeah. They've tried to. I see these ads on the internet, and all of you see these ads, and they're women in lingerie or whatever they call
bras and panties. Yeah.
And yeah. and they're fat, and they're trying to make that a normative kind of an okay thing, and it's look, even if you look at it objectively, there's nothing healthful or good about it. Nothing. You can't spin that into something positive. I'm sorry, it doesn't work.
I could have never predicted that because in my only fiction that I had published, The Unreal, is my first book of the novel. I can't get the other novels published so far, at least, but I think it's my best stuff. But I had one of the characters who was a running gag, you know, I use humor. They were at that time, the Book of Lists was very popular when I was writing it. I used to love the Book of Lists and the People's Almanac, and I devoured those things. And so I started having one of these characters would just make up lists of really the smallest minority groups in the world. So I remember one of them was Jewish janitors, and another one was overweight Victoria's Secret models. And I could never have envisioned that a couple decades later that there are overweight Victoria's Secret. I mean, that's because the idea was to come up with something that was obviously so non-existent that it would, again, be one of the smallest minority groups in the world. But that's, you know, who – I used to say all the time that pretty power, I used to call it pretty power, that there was that the most entitled group in the world were good looking women, that, you know, that's that it was they it gave them a power and a step up in life that, you know, is, I mean, I can tell you from my family background, I am related by marriage to Rutherford B. Hayes, believe it or not, president. And I had heard this through the grapevine. And this was because we had a section of my father's family that was in the society pages, they used to call it back then, that we had never met and we're never going to meet. But I knew how poor my father's family was. And the legend was that one of his cousins had married Rutherford B. Hayes III. And so, and I kept trying to think, especially I got older and I was researching our genealogy, and I kept thinking, how, because I knew how poor they were. I said, there's no way that they would have interacted, that family could ever have interacted with, at that time, Rutherford B. Hayes was an ex-president, with the ex, you know, it's not possible. But then I thought, there's only one way. There had to be a good-looking girl involved. And sure enough, I found a picture of the cousin, and she was very attractive. And it explains, so that right there explains what that's pretty power, what it used to be, where it can take literally a Cinderella type. Somebody, let me take you away from this, honey, if you're attractive. And that's what happened. And so even
pretty
though the
power.
Rest of her, pretty power.
Power.
And
well, they use the same construct now with the same letter P, but they don't, it's not pretty anymore. It's similar.
Yeah, well, it's still, you're right. That's a more blunt way of putting it, I guess. But you're right. It doesn't. But it used to have to have an attractive package, and you realize it's obvious.
You got it.
But now it's and I never force it, because I used to say all the time, like when you know, people that knew me when I was young, I would say, oh, that's amazing. The only people that you know graduate in the top of their journalism schools, because all of the television anchors, and they always looked like actresses and models. They always were incredibly attractive. And I used to say, really, there's not any average looking women that are great in journalism school. At the time I was kind of irate about it. But now, unfortunately, like so many things, I say, okay, I guess there was a reason for it, because when you see now that looks don't matter as much, It's a little, for those of us that spent time, you know, turning on a television and seeing attractive people, when you, they're not attractive anymore. I don't know. There's something about it
pretty has been denigrated now, partly because of the culture. I think mostly because of the culture, but it's different. See, the problem is, and all of you out there who are over 40, 45, the younger people, Gen Z now is up to age 28 and below, and they're adults, a lot of them. The millennials up to, I don't know, 48, 50, I can't remember now, but they're out of the, they're not competing anymore on a stage that we knew. It's a whole different world. They don't understand what we knew. They don't understand what we've lost. They have no idea of the values that we used to hold very dear. It's all been engineered. It's all been constructed. And they follow right along.
But it's something, just something on the looks like that. And again, this year talk, I wrote Bullyocracy, and I'm very sensitive to people being made fun of for their looks. But on the other hand, I don't think that people who are, you know, really overweight, I don't think they should be bullied, obviously, but I don't think they should be celebrated. And that's what happens. You end up with things like this ridiculous Lizzo, if you've seen her, this, you know.
That's funny you'd mention that. There's a story about her now. It says, Biden parties with Lizzo while Trump attends funeral or wake of New York City, murdered New York City cop. Lizzo. Lizzo is a hippo, right?
Yeah. Well, I think I had a few choice names for her one time when I was on my show, and some of the audience didn't like it. So, and again, they know I wrote Bullyocracy, so I shouldn't call names. But it's because, I mean, she literally, when I think it was on the Grammys, I heard this. I didn't watch it, but that she came out in a thong, I think. And I'm thinking, you know, with all the attractive, female artists and that people might like seeing come out in a thong, it's why would you? But you know why they do that on purpose, because they don't want to celebrate.
Oh, they try to outshock the next one. It's a competition to gross people out. The grosser you get, the more publicity you get. And no such thing as bad publicity. Remember?
No, that's right. So, and it's, so
all the Jewish agents will tell the stars that no such thing as bad publicity, unless you're caught with a 4-year-old boy. And that's bad, but generally speaking.
Yeah, I was, I don't know if you heard about this.
I got to look up Lizzo here, Don. I have a vague impression of having.
Yeah, find the picture of her in her thong at the Grammys. But no, and again, it's just, you know, it's not like she's Mama Cass. I mean, Mama Cass could really sing. Kate Smith could really sing. You know, she's not some kind.
Oh my! Oh my!
Yeah,
oh
yeah!
End
so that's
of
what we're that's that's what we're getting then, and so that's I don't know. It's just for those of us that grew up with, and again, at the time I complained. I said it shouldn't just be great look, because the guys weren't all great looking, obviously, but you know, all the girls were pretty much, and. But it's gone from one extreme to the other way too far. And now it's celebrated. And I don't know. And maybe if they were talented, it'd be different. Like I said, they're not talented either. So, you know, at least some of these.
I have not seen, Don, honest to God, I haven't seen talent in years. The people now don't know what talent is. They've been sold a bill of goods. Anyone can be made to sound marketable in an audio or sound studio environment. They can make anybody sound. They can pitch your voice. They can auto-tune it. They can do anything. And so what is real talent? Okay, real talent, the 50s music was the pinnacle of real talent. And 60s, we'll give them that.
Right.
I mean, come on. The Platters, Tony Williams, the Platters, that was so much better than Nat King Cole. Miles better. No joke. But they had talent all over the place in the 50s. No electronics. Real voices. Real talent. Jackie Wilson. Come on. Then we got into the rock band thing, and the electric guitar was went crazy. And that beat. And the best group I was very fortunate to see at their absolute peak on their last tour was Cream.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Oh my, were they good. Three men.
Yeah, sure.
Unbelievable. Indescribable. They were that powerful. I was really young at the time, but they were something else.
You know, my wife and I still go to, it's, you know, we have different interests, but we still like the same music, basically. So we still go to concerts. And so we just got tickets for two of the stars. So we're going to see, I mean, I love the Beach Boys. I've always loved the Beach Boys. And so we're going to go see a Beach Boy. I think Mike Love's the only one that's going to be there. But so I'll see, I haven't seen them for a while. And then we're seeing Roger Daltrey of The Who. I used to like The
Good.
Who.
Good. Well, let's see, that's fun. That's fun music, the Beach Boys.
Yeah, it is.
The fun times.
No, it's nothing, you know, nothing. You know, when I used to like, well, when I'm playing sports or something, to get myself hyped up, I would listen to the Beach Boys. You know, I don't, I just something about it would just fire me up. I don't know. They get the, I guess nowadays they listen to rap, you know, and they're, but it's the same premise, you know, it's something to get your blood pumping and get your adrenaline up. But that there's nothing like that. That sound that they made, it was unique. And they took a lot of black influences, like, you know, Chuck Berry, and they took a guitar riff from him and everything. Chuck Berry's another one that was incredible. But when he wasn't, when he wasn't, you know, carrying underage girls across state lines, he was damn good. But same thing with Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, when he wasn't killing his wives, you know, he was pretty good. But that's the problem.
Well, the 50s people, they really did have talent. They don't have it anymore. They just don't. I accidentally went ahead and looked for Lizzo and a thong, and I regret it.
I don't think she could have made Playboy of the Month, I don't think.
Oh,
back
my.
In the day.
This is really, if this is the new standard for what passes as beauty, and I'm not knocking obese people. They got problems. I feel sorry for them. Yeah. I'm very sorry for them. They can lose weight. They choose not to.
Yes. Yeah.
And now it's being certified as some kind of aesthetic pleasure. So look at an obese pig.
Yeah.
Male or female?
That's why I tell people that I don't like to be critical of them, but I can't explain it to you. But if you grow up as a fat kid, you always think of yourself as fat, no matter what. That's what you see still. And
well, that's interesting.
And I don't like it, and I don't like the look. And but it can be done. I know that. At 13 years old, I was able to, with no help at all, I just, you know, lost 40 pounds and grew like 7 inches in height. So over that summer, so together it was, you know, transformed my looks. And but so it can be done. But it takes willpower, you know, so you and it doesn't really take that much willpower either. You just got to portion control, you know, the main thing. That's right. What I learned after that.
Well,
is that,
ultimately,
you know,
it has to do with your health above all, though. My God.
Yes. Yes.
Now, not that kids know that, but it's up to their parents to let them know that what they eat and how they do it is going to determine how long a life they live and how healthy they are. And I don't know. It's just changed. It's all changed. And there's no going back. It's just different.
Yeah, it is. And, but we never know where these conversations are. Somebody asked me, or they messaged you, and I posted that I was going to be on your show tonight because, you know, people aren't used to knowing that I'm here on Fridays. And the guy said, oh, great. What are you going to discuss? And I said, I have no idea. We just come on, and it's just, you know, the conversation just takes tonight it took us back to elementary school and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, I think a lot of people really enjoy that. We all have elementary school days and elementary school challenges, and it changes. I'm grateful I went through the hell I went through, and I think you would say a similar thing. It made a better man of you. It made a better person of you. You learn. You took charge. You were accountable. Okay.
You also learn if you grow up and you look perfect, you're popular, and nobody ever makes fun of you.
No.
And
you don't
you're
earn
not
it.
Be
you
as,
can't appreciate it. I don't.
Yeah, you're not going to be as empathetic to the people, and you might be, if you are popular and good looking, you probably may very well be, or you're at least going to be laughing at you know the people that are being made fun of. So I think it. It gives you empathy where you don't want to. So I never made fun of anybody, and I never would, but because I knew how. I knew how it could.
Well,
have
we
been.
Were both cursed in our own way, so we We're outcasts, and we figured out a way to become included with our brains, our mind, conversational skills. Nothing to do with IQ necessarily, but I'm sure that's a factor. But we had to learn how to move through our peers and make things easier for us because we had a handicap.
Well, I don't know if you've heard of her name. What is her name? I think her name is Lizzie Vasquez. I think that's her name, Vasquez. But I've tried to get in touch with her, but she doesn't answer me back. She's gotten so big. But she was born, I don't know what she was born with, but if you see a picture of her, you'll know what I'm talking about. And she was voted by some idiots online the ugliest girl on the internet. And you would have to see how she looks. I don't know what she has. It's very, very skinny, but she was hurt at first, obviously. But she made lemonade out of lemons and she took ownership of it and started talking about it. And she became a huge celebrity herself. She's got millions of followers and when you listen to her talk, she's really smart and she's got a great personality and philosophy. I really admire her. I'd love to have her on my show, but and she's probably too big for me now, but I think that's it's such an inspirational story because she could have killed herself or something. Imagine just finding out that you've been voted the ugliest person on the internet. It's like what?
Peer pressure now is really ruthless. It's wicked. It's bad for kids.
No, and the kids, have always been tough. But since I wrote Bullyocracy, the dynamic has changed so much. This whole transgender thing has changed because I wouldn't know how to approach it if I was, thank goodness it wasn't a big deal when I wrote Bullyocracy because I described, I think, a different situation because a lot of these are kids that would be bullied in the past that were maybe thinking about transitioning. But now I'm wondering, I don't know what the dynamic is in the high schools anymore because somebody told me that, I don't know if it's true, that 25% of Gen Z is now identifying as trans. I mean, that's incredible.
Correct. 25%. That's correct.
Identifying
as LGBTQ+. So it's all in there. They have been gotten to and corrupted either by the media or their environment or whatever, their lack of parenting.
You know the power of propaganda, folks. Jeez, I mean, that's unbelievable. But so because of that, if there's that many of them, they're not just a few isolated trench coat mafia types, they may very well becoming the popular group. Because instead of going after the football team now, I think football's dying, I hear, at schools because people are concerned about injuries and stuff. And that was the basis of the hierarchy, the social hierarchy that I talked about in Bullyocracy. But it's ironic that it could be the kids that were most at risk of being bullied now because of this transgender stuff I'm afraid that so many of them now are going to say I'm transitioning because it's popular and they'll be considered cool.
I'm sure that's happening already. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a...
Remember, anything that makes you the center of conversation makes you a little mini celebrity in your little world. So people will do almost anything to attain that kind of notice.
Yeah, and that's the whole. So in a way, part of it is it's a revenge of the nerds type of thing. But obviously, I just recoil so much at what they're doing. I had a woman. From Paris on my show tonight, Laurence Benyou, who's a friend of my actor, a friend, Nick Mancuso. I don't know if you heard, a veteran actor, and he contacted me years ago. He's a fan of my books. I remember the guy from Stingray, and he in the 80s TV show, and he was in tons of movies. And he's a Renaissance man. He lives in Paris, and he's just brilliant to listen to. I've had him on my show several times, but he recommended her. So anyway, she was talking about, she's written a book on child sex trafficking, all her work's in French though. But also was talking about the transgender stuff in France. And it's taking hold there, although it's not quite as insane as it is here. I was telling her it isn't quite to the level but it's getting there. And so it's a worldwide thing. And you know, people that think this is
who's going to direct and lead these children, these young people out of this? They're going down. There's war on childhood and children being fought by Big Pharma with these shots. Yep. FDA, the CDC, I don't care who they're all part of the same matrix of evil, and they're trying to destroy children and childhood, and that carries right on up. Doesn't go away. Yep. These kids are in real trouble. I really feel sorry for them. Who's going to inspire them? What are their icons? Look at their icons, for goodness sake.
Lizzo. And you have the suicide rates through the roof for that. It's causing physical damage, and they already have people that are retransitioning back, and but they're already, it's messed them up. And the problem is, even if they have an obvious issue where they have to admit this caused mass suicide, it caused so many problems, they're never going to admit they were wrong, just like they're never going to admit, no matter how many people die from the vaccine or get injured from it, they're never going to admit they were wrong about that, because they're so vested in these narratives. And they hate us so much, the people that have been from the beginning protesting it, they're never going to admit we were right. And
no, I don't look for their approval. I don't care one whit about what they have to say. None of them. They can all go to hell. And it's where a lot of them are going, I think.
I would imagine so.
you hurt children, and you don't deserve to be on this planet. That's me talking, not for Don. But children and childhood.
Agree. What is the Bible says? That's pretty much the greatest crime. You know, whosoever, you know, injures one of the little ones, and that's what they're doing. It's just unconscionable.
I'm with that. Don, thank you for stopping by Friday. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you on the other side of the weekend, Monday.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Okay. Good night. Oh, goodness. I promised to talk about that bridge collapse. Didn't make it. Anyway, here's one funny little headline for you. Bridge disaster. The black box of the ship, yes, they have black boxes too, that hit the bridge is missing 2 minutes of sensor data recording. Sounds like the Nixon recording itself. And the name of the captain is being kept secret as well. And so this thing's got legs. It's going to run for a while. We'll be right back. Hold on.